Hey everyone, just wanted to pop in here real fast to say I noticed after we started recording that John's audio isn't the greatest. Sorry about that. If you could just hang in there for this week, we'll have it fixed by next week. The episode is awesome. We have a great guest on, David Enden, who enlightened us on a number of things. So if you could just get past John's horrible, horrible mic, I think you're in for a treat. Here we go.
Hey Nick.
Hey John.
It looks like the Tigers aren't the only ones wearing stripes now.
Oh, that was pretty good. That was clever. I get it. I see what you did there.
Yeah, you got it?
Yeah,
thanks.
I get it.
Thank you.
And this is Stranger Still. Welcome to Stranger Still.
Podcast where we answer questions about tigers.
Professionally. I'm Meow.
I'm John Began. I don't know what that was about there. You could try a little harder.
Something was stuck in my throat.
We have a special guest expert, bring it back, second time on the show, David Enden.
Hey guys, thanks again for having me. Really appreciate the time today.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. For those who haven't listened to the previous episode, we had David on previously to talk about whether or not zoos were ethical. But in case they haven't listened to that, can you elaborate on your expertise a little bit more?
Yeah, the answer to that podcast was there's a lot of gray area there. I started out in the field of conservation biology, doing the fun stuff over in Africa with big cat research. It was a little too sciencey for me, a little too boring to sit in a car and watch animals all day.
Write things down, I assume.
Yeah, every 2 hours when something happens.
Yeah.
But definitely fell in love with cats, came back to the States, took an internship at Turpentine Creek Wildlife Sanctuary, and fell in love with the mission there, went back and got my master's in animal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's where a lot of this knowledge comes from, variety of experiences in the field.
Sounds like it.
And in academics. Yeah.
I learned this like right before we hit record is that, I guess let me back up a little bit. The reason we brought you back is because the hot thing right now is, of course, Tiger King. And I binged it all in about 24 hours, of course, like everyone else. And there's kind of two main points that I took away from that, which is kind of what we covered on our other episode, which is ethical zoos. And the other is the idea of exotic animals and having big cats as a pet. And who better to have on our episode than you, who, as I found out, have interacted with Carol on a number of occasions. You've talked to Joe. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. So the most important takeaway before everyone makes a judgment, I think that people have to realize is most people's reaction to this series was, holy is this even real?
Yeah.
And it has been real for a long time, but you haven't heard of it because the only way to get this on a platform like Netflix was to dramatize it the way it was.
Of course. Yeah.
So when it comes to this whole Carol versus Joe thing, Carol was done very dirty in the film. It was very inappropriate. At the same time, if they didn't do it that way, would everyone now have their eyes open to what's going on?
Right.
So there's plenty that we can clarify and go over throughout this talk about, you know, what Carol's place is really like, what Carol's like. And I'm looking forward to chatting with that more about that.
Of course. And sorry, I should back up even further for those who haven't watched or don't know what the Tiger King is. I mean, we did a poll on our Facebook and there's a number of people who haven't watched it. So for those who haven't watched that, it is the story of this eccentric man who ended up with a lot of tigers and lions and ligers in a podunk zoo. I don't know, a roadside zoo. I don't know exactly what you'd call it. And kind of just, he, I'm trying to think of the delicate way to say it because there's certainly some mental disorders there, but he
we don't have to give the the psychological diagnosis. We can just say that there's a high level of narcissism, I think, involved in that without giving it an official disorder.
Well, I'm trying to, he got in over his head, I guess is all I'm trying to say. And in a big way, without spoiling much of that series. And within this tapestry that these seven episodes have weaved, there's this crazy story of like animal trading and people living with exotic pets and the dangers. And then there, on the other side, there's Carol Baskins, who's running a big cat sanctuary, and there's a lot of drama there as well that you've alluded to. So I guess, man, this is such a broad question, but what was your first takeaways after watching The Tiger King?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was excited. And I know that most of my peers in the community didn't feel the same way, but coming again at this from a very holistic, big picture perspective, I just couldn't believe that this mission was finally going to get the publicity that it needed. And I think that that's the most important, thing that happened. I also, and this is rare, had a lot of faith in people that they were just going to get the right message. And I can't speak for the sanctuaries themselves and their reporters, but in terms of the mass population, you know, the population that we're really trying to reach that wasn't aware, there was very positive feedback. Mm-hmm. It's on social media. I saw a graph recently that pointed out like some of the takeaways of Tiger King. And like one of the biggest things was this quick and massive drop in the idea of cub petting.
Yeah.
So although it wasn't perfect, and although Carol really is probably made the biggest sacrifice possible for this film, I just had a lot of faith that this was going to do good for the cats.
Yeah. So to put some numbers to kind of what you're talking about is I found some articles as far back as 2005 and as recent as 2018 about exotic pet trading. It's hard to get like an exact number on how much is spent, but between like capture and dealing and breeding and transportation of exotic animals, it's a roughly $15 billion black market industry. The only thing that
100%.
Yeah, the only thing that is more economic on the black market is weapons and drugs.
And it's very hard to get those exact numbers. Mm-hmm. But what were the two most common things in the docuseries was drug use and guns.
Right. Yeah.
We're right alongside.
Yeah.
Yep.
It takes a certain kind of person, I think. In my mind, I'm looking at this much broader, and maybe this is because one of the things in that documentary that spoke most to me was toward the end, and this is maybe a spoiler, but there's this moment where Joe sends two gorillas to a sanctuary for primates or something, I don't remember exactly, and he has this emotional moment where he's like, I saw them at the zoo and they were finally out of their cages and they were hugging, and I've been depriving them of that for 10 years or 15 years at that point. So the documentary focuses on big cats, but I feel like it's so much bigger than that. And as I started looking into it, the industry is like, it can go as little as tropical fish or as big as big cats bears and wolves and stuff. And each, and John, you can speak to like wolf breeding and stuff like that. I don't know much about that.
So that's a problem that I have a little bit of expertise on being involved, because now, since we've last had our last episode, I've got a 501c3 nonprofit for animal rescue for dogs.
Congrats. Very cool.
Thank you. So the way that's set up, you've got plenty of people in these same little areas, these like roadside zoos or just breeders that are making like wolf hybrids. And you know, you just call them a mutt and you get away with it. So it's like hard to track any of this stuff because it's a lot of small towns and there's not paperwork. That's why we're focused on making people aware of why it's important to spay and neuter and adopt like with paperwork and make sure that everything is set up with fees and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And the animals become a product at that point, you know, it's a business mindset. Mm-hmm. Whether you're a breeder and the savannas, the really cool large cats that are crossbred between our domestics and the African serval, you know, the job of that mother is to pump out kittens.
Yeah.
And when she can, where does she go? And the same thing with the wolf hybrids. And that's why you see a lot of them being rescued alongside of these big cats.
Yeah, yeah. And not even that, like if you go full tiger or lion or even a monkey or a lemur or something, most people get these things as babies and they're like, this is great, this is so exotic, of course, and then they grow up and all of a sudden they need a lot more space, or they're getting bored because they're not going on mile-long treks every day or hunting down prey, and they start acting up because that's what animals in captivity do. And they realize that this is a much bigger problem. And yeah. What happens to those animals? Either they go to a sanctuary, but we don't have nearly enough sanctuaries to handle all of these animals, or they get euthanized.
Yeah. I had, this one little breeder dog specifically was going to get euthanized. And then Desiree, who is like the founder of our rescue, swooped in, grabbed her up, and she lived under my kitchen table where I'm sitting at right now for about a year. But otherwise, that's exactly what happens. And you could publicize it, but it's so overwhelming the amount of times that happens that it's like, it's hard for people to see it and to like deal with it. So a lot of people just say, I don't want to see that on Facebook or whatever shared. Mm-hmm. So it makes it difficult to reach people to let them know that that's what happens. And that's why people continue to just go to like stores where puppy mills support them.
Right.
You know, they're selling their products to a pet store.
Yeah. And that's the same thing that happens here with the cats. There's some science behind it. And if anyone listening disagrees, you know, science proves you breathe air. So I don't really care. Unless you're not breathing air, I don't really want to hear it. But
we can use that as a show motto.
Actually, 50% of our listener base is fish, so.
Yep.
There we go. Well, what happens is a lot of people don't understand, you know, they see all these Instagram videos of these people interacting and raising these animals from cubs. And they say it's safe, but it's really not safe. It's really like playing with a loaded gun.
Yeah.
You know? When we domesticated farm animals and cats and dogs, we were breeding them for two traits. We were breeding them to allow proximity to humans, so to not have such a flight response so that we can manage them, and then to pick up on some of our human social cues. That's why when you talk about anthropomorphism around domestics, it's a fuzzy area, right? Because they really do understand us at a different level. Not to say that wild animals don't understand body language, but to put that in perspective, you can take a puppy or a feral cat and you can raise it to behave like a very well-behaved domestic animal.
Mm-hmm.
But when you try and take a wild animal who have not been bred down, they have not been selected for these traits.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to what you see happening with personality disorders in humans, right?
Yeah.
And so what you see is from incorrect parenting, the adult version of these individuals, they're diagnosable. And so now you throw that on top of a 400-pound apex predator and you want to tell me that it's safe. It's really not.
Yeah.
They're really messed up in the head. And I would rather jump into a cage with a wild tiger than I would with one of these, because you just have no idea what you're going to get.
Yeah.
It's a wild animal raised by a human being.
Yeah. And it's, gosh, there's not a lot of like deaths attributed, but there are a lot of injuries attributed to exotic pets. I mean, the most recent stat I have was from 1990 to 2011. It was 21 years, and there's only 75 deaths between that time, but there's 1,600 injuries during that time. And that's like the dangerous animals, which is a smaller population. There's somewhere between 4,000 and 10,000 big cats being held in captive, probably over 10K, but who knows. But like most reptiles, most exotic reptiles, 90 to 100% of them, were the stats that I got, carry salmonella. And other animals carry salmonella as well. Apparently, 74,000 salmonella cases per year are attributed to exotic pets. And most of these animals can also carry rabies or herpes B or monkeypox. And
I want you guys to imagine with me real quick. Just picture this in your eye. Imagine if there was like some kind of place where people would eat exotic animals, and then like some kind of like virus spread from that.
We're not talking about that, remember?
Oh, right, okay.
to be fair, that has also spread to a tiger, right, David?
It has. The tiger, there was a, from what I heard, which is pretty legitimate source, not from the news, but from what I heard, it was a classic person there in the biggest hotspot right now over in New York.
Right.
They were asymptomatic. Didn't know they had it. I think the tiger developed symptoms first, felt the cough, and then the keeper did, or vice versa. But that's why the reason why they needed people were upset that they tested the tiger. But back to a point we haven't talked about, we're talking about an endangered species. So
yeah.
Am I going to put them above humans? I think that's absolutely an incorrect statement to say, but they're pretty high up in a priority list. They definitely need to be checked above someone that has zero symptoms and may have been exposed. So the reason why they had to do that is there were other tigers there. They need to quarantine the animal before it spread to all the animals. And if the viewers aren't aware, because I just ripped apart a high school friend for this, but the corona is a zoonotic disease.
Right.
So where do you think it came from?
A bat.
and that brings us back to the point is we're getting closer and closer to wildlife. You know, in the past when we were less civilized, you know, yeah, we were out hunting, but we're closer and closer to rare species and a different number of species from human wildlife conflict, habitat encroachment, the trade, the black market trade, the meat markets over in
the wet
Asia.
Markets, yeah.
Yeah, the wet markets, the exotic pet trade. So you got to remember, this isn't a zoo taking care of these animals. These are just people. And what I mean by that, it's not several veterinarians from Cornell working there and monitoring everything and making sure they have the right vaccines and all that. These are straight wild animals coming in direct contact with people.
Yeah. And once again, I do have some figures for that. This isn't tigers, but in the 70s, there was a group of birds was imported to the U.S., some sort of exotic bird, and spread around an illness that ended up killing 12 million birds, which isn't a small number. But that's why it's not just us. It's also animals. Zootopic? Is it Zootopia? What is it called?
Zoonotic disease.
Zoonotic. And actually, on a lighter note, a bunch of zoos are posting videos of like penguins walking around, which I really enjoy. It cheers me up.
Yeah, looking at the aquarium.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to animal death and
yeah. Going back to the endangered species thing, this is one thing that I meant to bring up when I said that there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 big cats being held as pets. That's almost three times as many as there are living in the wild in their natural habitat. And people think, like, even in Tiger King, he says, like, people are worried about these going extinct. We're breeding them. We're bringing the population back to life. And I think we touched on this a little bit last time you were on the show, but that's the job for the professionals. There's people in the zoos that know a lot more about conservation than Joe Exotic or something like that.
Well, how are you going to put a cross-eyed white tiger or a descendant of a cross-eyed white tiger that's now orange again,
mm-hmm.
with all the garbage genetics back into the wild and ask it to survive? I mean, we've seen animals at the sanctuary, because for rabbits, a tiger cage is very safe in captivity because they don't know what the hell to do with it,
right.
And nothing else is coming in that cage.
Absolutely. They've only been fed dead carcasses or bologna sandwiches their entire life.
From the dumpster, nice hot dogs. Yeah.
And it's not even just that. It's that a lot of the animals that start off the breeding chain are taken from the wild before they're sold as pets. I got this quote from National Geographic that said, countless animals are taken from the wild before they're sold as pets. After an animal is plucked from the wild, often in violation of the law, it might be used in a breeding operation, sold locally, smuggled out of the country, or internationally mislabeled as captive bred and exported legally. Which brings me to my next point, which is the legality of all of this stuff seems so flimsy. And David, I don't know if you have more on this, but each state has its own regulations. Like here in Iowa, like big cats and bears and wolves are like straight up banned. But like John said, you can just go to some small town of 300 people and there's people crossbreeding with wolves.
I drove by, I think I mentioned in the last episode, I was going to do an adoption and I drove by a zoo and some lady had a bear and a lion and a tiger and donkeys and horses and pigs.
So that comes from USDA. So this is where it gets sticky. So I think the big law to talk about first is the Endangered Species Act.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, tigers are very endangered. There's 6 subspecies left. And some of them, their numbers are as low as like 250.
Wow.
And the Endangered Species Act prevents, I'm going to read it off, it's unlawful to import or export, deliver, receive, carry, transport, or ship, interstate or foreign, sell, offer a sale. So that's where it gets like really technical in the language. But mm-hmm. I think you get the idea that endangered species are supposed to be left alone.
Right.
Now, the tigers came to the U.S., the big increase in captive tigers, 100% happened with the white tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's guilty of that, from magicians to roadside zoos to accredited zoos. It's an attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about it, so they started off with these 2 white tigers. The easiest way to get another one, because it's a recessive gene, is to breed the 2 tigers together. So once you have a Bengal tiger and an Amur tiger, and you breed them together, they're not either species, they're generic. And that's where they are exempt, or were exempt, from the Endangered Species Act.
Oh, God. I see where you're
going. That's how they were getting away with it for so long. And it was actually written in the Act, Section 17.2 or 3, that specifically stated the generic tigers is exempt.
Yeah.
And so that's how they got away with it. That was recently fixed, I'm pretty sure, by World Wildlife Fund. They pushed that through. But then you have to, so then many of you are probably saying, so how can all these characters on this film have these tigers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you go over, so ESA is Fish and Wildlife. Then you go over to USDA and APHIS, Animal Plant Health Inspection. And APHIS and USDA are the ones that license these facilities to allow them to, you get what's called an exhibitor's license.
Yeah.
So accredited zoos, AZA, the good zoos, they have rules and standards that are very specifically designed for the animals to go towards conservation.
Mm-hmm.
They also need an exhibitor's license. But USDA, who gives out this exhibitor's license, doesn't have these same conservation-focused standards.
Mm-hmm.
It's more on animal welfare. So that's where you can have these roadside zoos still operating. It doesn't say anywhere, which is what I've been trying to push for a long time. Because I think for people like Doc Antle and all the people in the film that are quote unquote trying to work for conservation, I don't agree with what they're doing, but politically, I don't think it's correct to say it's just not going to go anywhere if we're like, we want to just completely shut you down. Like, at least give them the option, be like, okay, you can exhibit tigers if you follow these conservation practices, true conservation practices. I don't think that they will, so it'll work out anyways, But I think the point is you have AZA working towards conservation. You have USDA that are offering the exhibitor's license. USDA does not have conservation standards. They have welfare standards. And then you have the third agency, which is, I believe, Fish and Wildlife, which manages Endangered Species Act. So there's no uniform governing system, laws, and regulations for these animals.
So if you can't get permission from one, you can just hop over to the other, or no one talks to each other, so it's kind of easy to slip through the cracks.
It's the latter of what you just said. There's so many loopholes.
Yeah, just like the exhibitor's license.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from what I'm reading, like, there's some states that hardly have any regulations or restrictions on dangerous captive wildlife, like Nevada, Wisconsin, the
Carolinas,
North and South Carolina, West Virginia, Ohio, even after they had that huge outbreak in Alabama. But even in the states where you require a license, if you don't want to go for the exhibitor's license, some of them the license is like $40. It's like getting a fishing license to be able to keep these dangerous captive wildlife, if that's what you want to call them.
And if I didn't confuse you already, you know, say you didn't want like a lion or a tiger,
mm-hmm.
somewhere in the Constitution or some sort of federal law, if it's a native animal, like a bobcat, a lynx, or a cougar, or a wolf, somewhere we were talking about the definition under Endangered Species Act, mm-hmm. the take term, somewhere you're allowed to quote unquote take. So that's how they get away with the wolves and the cougar and the bobcat, because legally they're allowed to have them.
No.
That's horrible. Yeah.
There's some federal law. Damn. I have to look it up. But again, it's just one loophole after another.
John, did you have something?
No, just adopt puppies, guys. Like,
well, let me ask you, John.
Just play any pumps.
Let me ask you, if someone were to make a half wolf, half domesticated animal, how much do you think that a breeder would sell those for?
So, I mean, I've had what I was told were wolf hybrids that I helped adopt into a home. I think they were mostly husky. I don't know what they're coming from, because that's the trouble, is you don't know where these animals are coming from. A lot of the time, you're just
giving them. How smart were they?
They were really smart.
That's what I've read. That's what I've worked with a couple, but I've just read like the combination of the dog and the wolf just make like they do crazy, like turn on and off TV remotes, open up any cabinet, like just
oh my gosh.
Genius.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like they could probably figure out together to like they I could picture them jumping on one the other's back and get a trench coat and go to the movies together. Like they were smart as hell. So but they were sweet, and we trained them because they were so smart. We didn't want that to be turned into evil, because I would be worried that they would, like, you know, hack into my bank account or something. But together, they actually ended up getting adopted in Philly. We had a father and daughter that drove all the way out to Iowa from Philly and adopted them and then drove back with them. And now they're, like, living side by side together, which is sweet. But, awesome. Man, I didn't know what they were. And overall, like, you could just name your price. Like, I work with GoDaddy now, and I sell domains. It's the same deal. Like, you just... whatever that person's willing to pay is what you set that price for. There's no regulation on it, because there's some dude that he could sell. Oh, there's a wolf at $2,000. Like, that's normal.
Yeah. So
I think you guys use Trustpilot. Totally off topic, but.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. We just acquired them, I think.
Yeah.
So that was a really long way around to what I really wanted to get to, which was that, like, breeder dogs will sell upwards of, like, $2,000. And I was reading that you could get a tiger or big cat cub for as little as $300, which only compounds to this issue of, like, well, I want a really sexy animal, and I can get it cheaper than I can get a
cell phone.
A dog. Yeah, of course, a cell phone, yeah. Why wouldn't I get this tiger?
Yeah.
It's a horrible idea. Yeah.
It's cuddly.
For now.
Because
when it, like I mentioned before, as soon as they outgrow their, and I read some definitions of like what defines an exotic pet. And one of the definitions I liked a lot was that it's an animal that requires more needs than a human can provide, which is incredibly vague, but I think it also hits it right on the head, because we can't provide them enough space. We can't provide them with the right amount of food, and we can't provide them with the right amount of exercise. And
cognitively,
and physically, like they can't chase their food, and like a lot of these animals do traverse miles a day, and they're sitting around a 40-foot cage or whatever. And the danger with that is when they grow older, they can start to become malnourished or just bored. Like the African gray parrot, which is nearing extinction, are known to, quote, pluck out their own feathers due to stress caused by boredom and captivity and lack of opportunity to socialize with other parrots, which isn't even something you think about. Is now you're ripping this animal out of its pack, which most of these animals do have some sort of pack, because as we've talked about on the show before, having a community betters your chances of survival, and now you're ripping that away from them. They have to talk to your dumb face, and that's not enough for them.
It's like a 100-year commitment.
Yeah,
they live a long time.
Yeah, you got to like exercise to make sure to take care of them so that you live long enough.
Go vegetarian.
Yeah.
You were just to piggyback off what you were just saying, most of my research, I'll just tell you guys about it quick because it kind of drives home a point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we're so quick to give animals human traits, and a lot of times we don't realize that their perception of reality is completely different. And I mean completely different. Mm-hmm. So for part of my master's, what I was looking at was the relationship between an animal's evolutionary psychology. So how they physically evolve to fit their niche on planet Earth, and welfare and captivity. And one of the tests that I did was an object discrimination test. So asking them to discriminate between a tube and a brick.
Yeah.
And the data paints the clearest picture. There's a great book that ironically I didn't find out about until after the research was done. My friends, The Wall. called Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Really Are? It talks all about this. We had these otters that were the only ones to discriminate between a tube and a brick, but they took forever to learn it. Then we had like a camel and a sun bear and a couple other animals. They caught on to the task really quick. They had a very high learning curve, but then it plateaued right before discrimination. And so when we went back and did some research, you know, otters are tool users.
Right.
So they're constantly discriminating bunch things right in front of them visually with their hands, touch. All the other animals were olfactory, scent based.
Yeah, interesting.
So we were asking them a good task, but the wrong way. So we went back and retested. We did different scents on the objects, and those animals learned faster and discriminated. So I think what the point is, though, is like animals are so specific into how they perceive the world and what their needs are. And for you as a human, without learning these things, to say that you know what a wild animal needs is very ignorant.
Yeah.
Very, very, very ignorant.
Yeah. So... make sure my dumb mind understands. Basically, it's like we can say that this cup is a cylinder and we can assign names to it, but an animal doesn't care. it smells like plastic and it's red. That's what this thing is.
Well, I think what it is that the animal can do it. It's just that some animals perceive the world because they evolved to be tool users or visual beings through eyes. Other animals, like dogs, perceive the world through smell.
Yeah.
So on that basis alone, so on the side, I do dog training. And usually I wind up with the problem children. It's not fun, like sit or walk nice or things like that. Yeah. But the most common thing is like my dog has too much energy. And the most common breed is going to be some sort of hound or some sort of herder. And that's because just like wild animals evolved fit a niche, we bred dogs to also fit a working role. So if it's a herder, highly active, like needs to figure things out, solve problems. If it's a hound, you know, you need to do a lot of scent enrichment, keep it busy.
Yeah, cognitive exercise, like you mentioned before.
Yeah.
If I could chime in with this too real quick. Thank you. I have a Brussels Griffon dog, right? Little JJ. They have eye issues. When I first got him, he had one eye. That ended up being a problem. So we got that closed up because he had just the hole on the other side of his head. His other eye ended up needing to be removed because he had an issue with it where, not to put it lightly, it popped out, basically.
Yeah.
We took him to the vet. He lost vision. And then when we found out he's probably not going to get vision back, I bawled my eyes out. I was so sad for him because I love that little guy. Well, it turns out that eye just kept getting infected. We had it removed and nothing changed at all. He gets around just the same. He's just completely scent-based. He knows his way around my home. He finds his way around where he is based on textures because I have carpeting on the stairs and wood floors downstairs. Mm-hmm. So it's like nothing's different. And I realized that I was just projecting how I was going And I think we talked about that in that episode too. When that first had happened, I was like, I wonder if he remembers what I look like, but that was never important to him. You know?
Right.
Yeah. That's
the silly thing to get upset about is he remembers my scent, and that's just how he has a different reality.
Yeah.
And when you talk about a tiger, I mean, that's an animal that's just designed to do
just to tear things
very
apart.
Couple things. Yeah. It's basically sleep, patrol your territory, eat, and have sex. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's all they do. So, you know, you're taking a lot of those things out. And you can't supplement a lot of those things when you're having them as a pet or in the backyard.
Or in a roadside zoo.
Yeah.
Man.
So we could probably go into some more details about the film if you want.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm super curious about that. I'm trying to think, this is probably a good moment to take a quick breather. Reflect on our lives and we'll take a quick break and be right back after this.
Yep. But first, go to adoptapal.org to adopt a puppy from me.
you had to squeeze that one in there, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, plug it in anywhere you can. Also, it's my show, whatever. And I mean, come on, just get a dog. You don't need a lion or a tiger.
That's true. All right. Now we'll take a break.
Yeah.
Real fast, before we get to the fun stuff, we do have to plug ourselves. So, John, where can people find us?
StrangerStillShow.com or where you did right now.
Yeah, you can also leave us a review, and that's a super nice thing to do. That's how a word spreads out, and we can send our good messages to even more people. Speaking of good messages, I think we were going to talk about Tiger King, right? Oh, yeah. Before we get into that, I assume that there's going to be spoilers ahead. So if that's something that you want to stay away from, I totally understand. But just here's our compromise. Pause the episode, go watch all 7 episodes, and come back, and we'll still be here. How's that?
It won't be hard. It's pretty well produced.
Yeah.
They knew how to write a story, if anything.
Dude, yeah. It just keeps going. Like,
they're launching another one.
Yeah, I heard
another
that.
Another episode.
Yeah. Is that tomorrow? Is that what you said, John? I thought that's what John said.
Oh, I don't know, man.
Oh, I misheard you. No, they're pumping out another episode because of the response, but it's been crazy, and it's really interesting, whether it's real or not, just like listening to the producers discover things along with us, like, wait, what did you just say?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Like, I know how this works, so it's probably not entirely fair to say that that's exactly how it played out, but also, like, the like you said, the way they tell a story at the end of an episode, you're like, all right, story's wrapped up, and then they're like, oh, by the way, Carol has a missing husband, and you're like, are you okay? I guess like, well, here's my whole day now.
There's someone that was writing a script who was like, damn it. Yeah
so
I guess start all over.
Starting at the beginning though, one of the points that you, I'm just going to lay it out there, one of the points that you kind of wanted to talk about is what these people doing even conservation or good for the greater good? I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But
so the one moment, I'll never forget it, where I launched off my couch and said something out loud in this whole film was when cool, I'm used to it. Like, this is the world.
This
is what goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But Doc Antle, I don't have any beef with Doc Antle. I've never had a run in with him or a problem with him other than what he does to the animals. But he said that they're funding conservation.
Mm-hmm.
And I leaped off my couch because the one plug there that they were missing was how.
Yeah.
How much do you contribute? So with zoos, I mean, you can go online, and we talked about this last time, look up their Form 990 financial, and you can see how much they contribute, you know?
Right.
We've got some fun going down that path, shredding PETA. So.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We'll stay away from that path. But
yeah,
that's the big thing, is there's never been a tiger reintroduced to the wild, and there never will be, because there's nowhere for them to go. So the only other possible argument is we're funding conservation. How much, dude? Because you got a really luxurious looking quote unquote zoo, quote unquote sanctuary.
For profit.
And you got a really nice house. Actually, you got like 3 of them, one for each wife and your own.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to conservation? You know, $300 a ticket or whatever they're paying. They mentioned it in the film.
An exorbitant amount.
And breeding a white tiger or a golden tabby, which doesn't exist in the wild, or an all-white tiger, which doesn't exist in the wild, or a liger, which doesn't exist in the wild, so on and so forth. How is that helping conservation?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not in any way a part of conservation. And unless you're going to show me your financial data where you donated X amount of money to conservation, had some impact, and it's not. And even if you did, you're still using an animal as a product to do that.
Oh, it's all a show. And they don't have to show you how much money they spend, because these are for-profit zoos. But
they paid for a boob job. Yeah. So,
yeah. You know.
That part was so heartbreaking, because it's so like that literally is 2 hours away where that girl lives, and it's so close to home. I was like, it's just a Midwestern girl. It hurts the people get wrapped up in that. But like, the moment that Doc shows up on screen, it's all a show. And that's the one thing I love about this documentary, is they show it when he turns off the lights, when he turns off the show, because he's talking about, he's on David Letterman, and then he's done talking about it, so he just goes back to being his normal self. But it's all in an effort to make a buck, and a large portion of that buck does come from like $600 spent to pet a baby tiger cub,
which is a product,
which is
no matter what they say.
Yeah.
So there's a whole supply chain to this. I mean, when you look at it, if you step back for a second and stop looking at it as an animal, you'll see the picture is really clear. You have a product, the product generates you money,
mm-hmm.
revenues. Over time, just like any piece of equipment or machinery, you know, that gets rusty or old, the tiger grows up, it's too big for cub petting. So can't use it anymore.
Yeah.
And if there gets to a point where you have enough adults there, so I always tell people, when you're following black jaguar, white tiger, there's not a lot of adults there. Where do the adults go? So Joe will come pick them up someplace like Joe.
Yeah.
Or you know, as you saw in the film, they disappear.
Yeah, that's also incredibly heartbreaking.
But then you don't have a revenue stream. So what do? You breed more cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell people that I don't know what it is, why people are so fascinated with touching big cats. We're not allowed to do that anymore at sanctuaries. But I have, before they set in those regulations and those rules, go to a broom, just like touch a broom. It's very, very similar to a tiger.
Yeah.
And a lion is softer, but especially with the males because of their mane,
mm-hmm.
they're so greasy that your hands have like tar on it afterwards. It's not like a cool thing, like at all.
Right.
And now, you know, you see all these crazy Instagram celebrities creating these magnificent relationships with these animals. We still do that, and we don't go in the cages with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that some of them like really form some incredible bonds to us.
Yeah.
So again, just like I think people need to just stay away from wildlife. Like, them be wild.
Get out of their business. It's none of our business.
Do boob jobs.
Do some boob jobs. Speaking of boob jobs, what do you feel was missing from the documentary?
So much on Carol.
Yeah.
So they did her so dirty. I'll give you a perfect example of how they twisted this. So one of the big things Joe was talking about, he was talking about two big things. He talked about the cages and he talked about the food and the water.
Mm-hmm.
So coming from a guy with the number of cats that he had, he needed about 1,000 pounds of meat a day. And there was a point in the episode, one of the episodes, and this is just an episode. This wasn't a point in the year. You know, this is just an episode that they caught on camera that they didn't know if they were going to have enough food.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't feeding them the right food.
They're feeding them bologna, Oscar Mayer wiener.
And the cats. Cats can't lose weight once they gain it. You'll see, like, you can always tell if a cat was overweight. I don't know if you ever noticed, like, a domestic cat, they have this flap of skin.
Oh, yeah.
There's always just there because they're not designed to put on weight. The cat in the wild, they're only successful 20, 25% of the time. They feast and then they don't eat for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So the big thing, so first with the cages. So Joe's habitats were bare. Tiger doesn't like that. Carol's habitat had shrubs. Does USDA like that? Not really. You have to worry about, you know, managing other, you know, like insects and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't think a tiger would mind being in the jungle. That's where it's from. The big thing with the cages was they had a little bit of rust. That's the only thing I saw. But this is a very well-known issue. We have something called the Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance. And we're trying to figure out a solution to this every year for those facilities down in Florida because it's so humid, so the metal rusts. So that's nothing new. And then to finish it off, those food and water stations was Carol is running her facility as strict and regimented as a zoo. What she's doing there is they're able to see how much the animal eats every day and make sure that they're drinking.
Mm-hmm.
At Turpentine, we had to report that information in because if a cat's not eating right for 2-3 days at a time, you have to start keeping them on close watch or get them to a vet. So they really blew animal care out of proportion. They really had no idea what they were talking about.
Yeah, and they're film producers, so... They're trying to sell a story, and unfortunately, some facts will be lost in that.
And Carol's
it was overshadowed by the free work by volunteers and the support team that she had. That
they focused on that for many years
to get the different colored shirt. Yeah, so that's like the only takeaway that like I can recall from that.
And that's another thing that was discussed at the conference is like, how do we create these loyal volunteers and loyal people? And Carol's approach is very smart. You know, she doesn't want to have to pay to retrain everybody. She wants to be able to trust the people that are working with her animals. And what's the best way to do that? Well, if you're going to put in the time, you can do it. And you work so hard to get there. It shows that you want to be there, that you're not just trying to work at Big Cat Big Cat Rescue just to be close with a tiger, that you genuinely want to work and believe in the mission. So she's one of the most prestigious sanctuaries in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give you an idea of how dirty they did her, she's always at the forefront of pushing the laws. She's always pushing the mission. So they definitely were not nice in the way they portrayed her facility.
You know what's interesting is at the very end, they say, like, the big cat something law still hasn't been passed, as if that was, like, the thesis for the documentary. And I was like, you didn't seem like you really cared about that piece of legislation. So don't be pretending like you care now at the very, very end of the
Where are they now? The thesis is, like, tongue-in-cheek saying, oh, who are the real animals here?
Yeah.
Like, tongue-in-cheek annoyingly, but, man, did they do it well. It is an entertainment way.
It is.
But when it comes down to, like, bringing awareness, yeah, what's that law that was not passed, and what's something that she's working towards?
So it's called the Big Cat Public Safety and Protection Act. And again, just to put things into context, when I first started 7 years ago, you didn't really see Big Cat Public Safety Protection Act without Big Cat Rescue's name next to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the sanctuaries now are fighting for it and supporting it. But I think the point that I'm trying to drive home is this is a woman that is very dedicated to the mission. She takes phenomenal care of her animals. It's equivalent to what you see in zoos. And she's really been on the side of the cats the whole entire time. There's no, you know, you see her house. It's not some prestigious house like Doc Antle's.
Four houses, yeah.
Yeah, she just has this house, you know, it looked like a little ranch house. That's it.
You know, now that you mentioned,
you know, she's not living big.
I think it goes to show that they do show a lot about how Doc treats his tigers and how Joe treated his tigers, but they never showed how Carol treated the tigers. And I think that that should probably speak volumes, because if they didn't see a problem there, they weren't going to show it on the television.
Right. And what did they show? They showed her years before, when she was originally breeding, which, by the way, I can name on one hand all the sanctuaries that started that weren't breeders or collectors beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
All mostly were in the same position as Carol, where they're obsessed with these animals. They own them, and then they're just like, this is wrong. Like, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So
there are...
But it, like you said, it speaks volumes.
Yeah. There are two, obviously, unanswered questions in this documentary. One is, was Joe framed?
Was Joe framed? I mean, oh, I don't want to get in trouble here.
Do you think Jeff?
I think
this is opinion, so whatever you say is not held in court at something.
I think that 100% Joe needed to be stopped.
Mm-hmm. I think that's my message. I took away too.
I think that when you look at Joe's psychology, how realistic was it? I also don't know enough details, because I know he harassed Carol and threatened her severely.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, his level of narcissism and grandiosity.
He's a dangerous,
like, let's go. He's dangerous. And sociopaths, that's typically, it's going to be antisocial personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Narcissism or narcissistic personality disorder, they're in the same diagnosable cluster. There's four of them in there, and they usually overlap. So I think he's just completely unpredictable. I don't think that you give a fair answer on that.
Fair enough. Now, the other topic.
Before you jump in there, I do have to say one thing.
Yeah.
What I will say, Joe was not the most dangerous person in that film.
Oh.
At all.
Doc?
And I will leave it at that. But in terms of animal abuse and danger, I can't prove this, so I'm not going to tell you who it is. But I can, from the stories I've heard from colleagues, from the videos and undercover stuff that I've seen at these conferences and dealing within this community, by far, Joe is not number one.
Interesting.
And that was a disappointing part of the documentary.
Well, maybe episode 8 will
perhaps
fill in those gaps.
There's only three left. Who's it going to be?
So I guess, the other question on everyone's mind is, what is up with Doc's haircut?
Yeah.
He just didn't get the memo. He looks like, what's that movie, The Witcher?
Gerald?
Yeah.
What his name is?
Yeah. Oh, what do they call him? Bogdov?
Oh, yeah. How do you pronounce
word
it?
Word for God?
Yeah. Hang on, I gotta Google this now.
So ridiculous.
Yeah, he's got his head up his ass. Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
That's
it. They also call, so that's like a Eastern traditions, I think, because that's another word, Bhagwan. That's what they call, what's his name? Osho.
Oh.
Do you remember Osho was his old cult? They call him Bhagwan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it means like God or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a frightening man. I'm just looking at him. No, seriously, did Carol do it?
I don't think there's a bone in Carol's body that would do it. Again, things from the film that were completely inaccurate. Talking about a meat grinder.
Yeah.
The meat grinder is one of these old school meat grinders that sit on a table. you're talking about you're talking about motives. He's a really rich, rich, filthy rich man that was burying gold, and the money wasn't that clean. Nothing that we saw was clean.
Right.
So, like, was that the, you know, there's plenty of people out there. I heard a rumor. That's going to be my new thing. my new plug. I heard a rumor, you know, from law enforcement down in that area that we're investigating at this time, is that, like, this isn't the only person that didn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also heard a rumor that the ex-wife in the film had a lot of domestic violence with him.
Oh.
So then
she was
then you get
like an angel.
And oh, she just, I knew the Long Islander in me was just like, look at her sitting there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, look at her sitting there. She is one twisted evil. She's like, I tried to get away with it and I got nothing. That's all it was. Sitting in this rich house.
Yeah.
But, the biggest ones for me, and I got to be honest, like, one's going to be scientific and the other is just going to be personal.
Mm-hmm.
Having known everything I just told you, when you feed a tiger, a chicken, or a turkey, 100%, they're eating every bone. It's digesting through. You'll barely out, 100%. But when you feed them butcher, you know, cow or horse, that's illegal here, but just to get to the point, or even a deer,
mm-hmm.
they don't eat the bones. They gnaw on them for days like a dog would on a bone.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about a human femur or something as thick and strong as a human skull, not getting digested.
You'd see something. All. See, that's what I was going to ask you, is at some point someone says like a tiger's stomach is so acidic there's no bones left. But
if you feed him
right.
something small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my final grand finale on this, here's this guy, lived a crazy life, right? His first wife batted crazy after his money with his daughters.
Yeah.
Second wife, definitely... Cal's unique, you know.
But
I'll say that.
What he expected.
That, and, you know, they had a difference of opinions, right? So here's this guy that took these planes and buried gold in places, right?
Yeah.
And now he has this hot little Costa Rican chick down there. I would have done exactly what he did, or what I think he did, and I just would have hightailed. I don't know if you've ever had like a crazy girlfriend or a bunch of crazy girlfriends.
You think
or just
he
like
ghosted
that,
Carol?
I think that's exactly what he did. I think that was the most brilliant, because he told the secretary, he's like, if I get away with this tomorrow, it's going to be amazing. And then he disappeared, right? And so I don't know if you've ever been to Costa Rica too, but like, that's my favorite place in the world. So like, from my personal opinion, you know, crazy relationships, and knowing Costa Rica, I would have just been like, see you later, restart on life.
So do you think he subscribed to Netflix in Costa Rica?
Do you think he what?
Do you think he's watched this? Do you think he's subscribed to Netflix?
I don't think he'd be alive, because I think
he was an older gentleman, yeah.
He was so much older. And then if Carol had claimed that there was some Alzheimer's going on, I believe.
Yeah.
So he was definitely up there in age.
Yeah.
But I know Carol. I've spoken with Carol. I've worked with Carol and Howard on a project for another sanctuary. I've worked with them and a couple of chats on the internet with Carol.
Mm-hmm.
She's really just the sweetest lady until one thing, until you abuse cats. She's really just one of the, she's for me personally, on my personal journey, she has been one of the, aside from Turpentine, but you know, they have my heart and I'm all about them, but second to them, I mean, Carol has literally, anytime I reached out or asked, or she's always there. And again, to bring it back to the personality disorders that we saw in the film, and when you are evaluating that from a human perspective, I mean, typically to kill someone, you're going to have one of those things, and you just didn't see those behaviors shown by Carol like you did these other people.
Right. And if they were there, they would have showcased them for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from carrying, you know, Howard on a leash, and I mean, that was it. That's like normal. That's like normal weird. You know, people do weird.
It's 2019.
Stuff like that all the time.
We can do whatever we want.
Yeah, but when it comes to peer pressuring a woman into sex and getting a boob job,
mm-hmm.
That's a whole nother form of psychology there. I mean, that's pretty high level. So no, I would have done to conclude. Hell no, I would have done exactly what I think he did. And just said, "See you later. I'm going to live in Costa Rica with some cats." And this,
I think that's fair. One last thing, just to kind of close on this. From what you said, and I know you probably can't say too much, it sounds like this kind of stuff has been going on for a long time. What is the craziest thing you've seen in your line of work? Anything like Tiger King?
From the people or the animal side?
Man, either one.
From the people side, I tended to keep a distance. So I worked undercover for a while. There's a great film. If you like this movie, there's a great film to learn a little bit more on the animals. It's called Elephant in the Living Room. And the star of that documentary has been my mentor for a long time. And he started out as a cop. So I did a lot of undercover stuff for him, kind of stayed away from the crazy. And I've always known how crazy these people are.
Yeah.
I did serve as an interim executive director at a sanctuary in LA. And I was excited about the position because the people were really awesome. Place needed some improvement, but I really believed in what they wanted to do there. But when I got there, it was like vultures coming in all around me from all these people, what we would call like the bad guys. And that's where I experienced things firsthand. I mean, there's one time I wound up, you know, threatening text messages, not knowing who to trust. I mean, even the authorities, this one government agency, I had kind of reached out and said, listen, like, I'm starting to feel like I'm a small pawn in a game of chess here. Mm-hmm. And I really don't feel safe under these circumstances. And she basically said, yeah, I think you're right. It's like literally the email I got. And I'm like, okay, so now I'm supposed to feel real safe. Thanks a lot here. But that was the game changer for me, because there was so much responsibility and I was here for these animals. And you got these people moving chess pieces around when these animals needed help.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I stepped down for a while. I'll come back, but I think there's just so much politics and money coming in the way of the mission.
That's really sad.
Not right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of animals, I was fortunate enough to be in this place in Colorado. So in terms of the animal danger side, they have a network, the bad guys. And like I brought up, a lot of times they need to dump the adults. And that's when you have these really big overpopulated facilities. And so I was getting my master's here in Colorado, and the sanctuary I used to work for, Turpentine Creek, wound up one of the largest rescues ever to happen in the U.S., over 100 cats there. The first day they got there for inspection, and I mean, that was pretty bad. I mean, the people there were still trying to go in the enclosures with the animals. You had there some tiger gave birth, and then while we were there, another tiger gave birth, so they were doing cub petting there. That was probably the worst one.
Wow.
And a lot of those cats came over from Joe, so.
It's all connected, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
Connected, corrupt. That's why it's important for people to know.
I think that
the good sanctuaries.
Well, yeah. Well, I thought you were going to go a different direction. I thought you were going to say that this good for that this came out so people. It's like one of those things that you never expect to go on under the noise, I guess.
Yeah.
And now there's finally awareness about it.
Even with our polling that I was trying to see who has seen this so far. There are people that won't watch it because they don't like true crime, and it's very possible no one was killed in the end in all this. You know, like. The whole moral of the story is like, let's try to not, let's just leave animals alone.
Yeah.
To be honest, just to give you some perspective and listeners to some perspective. So John and I went to high school together, and it would be like this. It'd be like someone be like, yeah, John killed somebody. And I'd be like, no, he didn't. it's like, it takes a certain kind of person to kill somebody.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
Yeah. Imagine right now trying to kill somebody. Can you imagine it? Probably not. Because you're, well, hopefully. Hopefully you can. But let's say, just to wrap. What's that?
Thanks for covering me.
Well, it's also the science too, right? Like the biggest thing for me is the bones.
Yeah.
Right.
Got to lean back like on the science for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you can't argue that. I've seen it. You know, I've seen what these animals eat. I've cleaned their shit up. So, like, I get it.
Yeah.
But you can't. There's so much more to that story that I feel like if they wanted to do diligence, we've seen all these murder mysteries on Netflix, and they're always so good about the police reports. Like, where's the police reports on this quote unquote murder mystery?
Mm-hmm.
It's one guy giving an interview.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, I don't really know, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe she'll get her fair shot at it. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
It sounds like she's a type that'll just brush it off and just keep focusing on cats, though, instead of finding like a counter documentary, you know?
And that's exactly what she did do. And I got to say it because no one said it, and no one in my industry probably will say it, but she has made the ultimate sacrifice. She really has. And I know they're upset because they felt that they were lied to, because the producer said that this is going to be like the next Blackfish. Well, they were right, because I think it's bigger than Blackfish.
Yeah.
Wrong message. But you know what? It's like, I haven't had a chance to feature yet, just because of everything going on.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be respectful of her time to deal with this. But she really, I couldn't imagine making a sacrifice that she made to get this message out. And I think that's the real story. You look at what this woman did for these animals. She put it all on the line. Yeah. You know, her memes are like one of the most popular things. Yeah. I've never seen something like that
in the world. Yeah.
Some of her are funny. I'm not even going to lie.
I mean, it's the memes that inspired me to watch it. So,
well, it was like when there was like breaking news. Tiger at Bronx Zoo has coronavirus, and it's a picture of Joe. It's like fucking Carol Baskin. Like,
yeah. Just...
or like my favorite, my absolute favorite one that came out was Joe and his political campaign, and it's like coming out of coronavirus, and it's just like, I'm broke as shit. I have done drugs. I will not wear a suit. I've had some kinky sex. I was like, yeah, that sounds like quarantine.
not my president.
Yeah.
So.
But how do we turn this into something positive?
Well, yeah. to wrap things up, let's say that people walk away with the message we all want them to have, which is that we need to be looking out for these animals and make sure that they're being treated correctly. What are some ways that people out there, our listeners or other people, can help?
It's a great question. You know, obviously there's donations, right? But I think it's much more impactful to do the following. We talked about this on the last time I was on your podcast with you. There's a ton of information out there. There is, for zoos, there's the AZA, the Association for Zoos and Aquariums. Mm-hmm. If there's a zoo that is part of the AZA, it'll be on their website, or you can find it on AZA website. There are there's the Global Federation for Animal Sanctuaries. It's the same thing, but for sanctuaries. Mm-hmm. So that's the type of sanctuary that you want to be supporting. There's financial, if you want to get really nerdy on it, maybe you have a lot of money and you're not in student debt, so you're going to like donate like 10 grand. Go ahead and look at their financial statements. Look at their USDA. So when the USDA goes and inspects, if there's citations, that all gets written up and put online. So do your homework. And, you know, it's very hard to donate nowadays, especially for our generation. I think the best thing that you can do is just make sure that you're going to the right places.
Yeah.
That you're not going to go spend $300 to pet a tiger cub and add to the problem. And because you don't need to donate, but the money you spend at admissions is still going towards that organization. So at the very least, make sure that you're going to the right organizations.
Yeah, there's just to pat myself on the back here, like twice a year, three times a year, we make our way over to the Blank Park Zoo, which is a member of the AZA. And I'm really considering sponsoring the red panda exhibit that they have there.
There you go.
It's not a big cat, but I love red pandas.
But that'll make its way back to conservation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why they're AZA.
So, yeah, support your local zoo if they're part of the AZA.
Yeah, and make sure that a sanctuary, the easiest way to tell if a sanctuary is good or bad, space and physical interaction.
Mm-hmm.
You want a lot of one and none of the other.
Yep. I think that's like, there's no better way to put that into words. It's beautiful there. All right. AZA.
AZA. I think that'll do it.
Well, thanks again for having me, guys. And just for my own little plug here, remember, go on to the Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance. That's where you can find the best big cat sanctuaries. They're all accredited by GFAS, the Global Federation for Animal Sanctuaries. And definitely check out turpentinecreek.org. It's the sanctuary that I spent a lot of time working with.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thanks again for coming on. This is... I'm not blowing smoke up your butt when I say that my wife tells me every time we go to the zoo that the episode you were on when we talked about the zoos was her favorite episode that we've done. And that was, what, 2 years ago already?
Yeah.
It's still her favorite episode. Yeah. So
now it's going to be second favorite.
Yeah. If she makes it all the way through Tiger King. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
It's great to catch up, guys.
Yeah.
Really appreciate what you guys do.
Yeah. We appreciate everything you do. Thanks for fighting the good fight.
Right.
So until next time, I'm still Nick.
I'm still John.
I'm still Dave.
And this is Stranger Still.